This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to today's after show. Very exciting. Now, we've been meaning to give you an update on the YouTube channel. So, quick update. The podcast, sections from the podcast will be going up on YouTube. So, not the whole thing right now. It's just, I don't know, do you want the whole thing to go up? It's long. But it'll be likely what we'll do in the beginning is some of your after show questions. We will be cutting that segment out of the video version, and you'll be able to watch that on YouTube. That will go alongside Behind the Project, and we have started filming episode one of Behind the Project. Connor, our producer, who is also now behind the camera, he is putting together just some stuff that we're doing right now in lockdown. So we'll probably do a Behind the Project for lockdown and a few more episodes in lockdown, and then hopefully when we come out, you guys will see some stuff. And you know, it's covering our day from stuff we do at locker room, for some of the meetings that we're having behind the scenes, some of our training, and then yeah, all the juicy stuff in between. So that's coming out soon, so make sure you guys are hanging for that YouTube channel. We appreciate everyone's support who's pretty keen to or who's expressed their keenness to check out our YouTube channel. So big news. Whoop. Since October 2021, when they got the unicorn valuation that we spoke about with Will on the show. So the unicorn valuation means $1 billion, right? So we've got valued at $1 billion. Just to give people an understanding how valuations work. So when you do a round of investing, right? When Whoop says, okay, we're going really well, but we need, you know, we might have say like $10 million in the bank. Now for the next phase of our evolution, we need $100 million in the bank. In order to get $100 million in the bank without taking on investment, it might take 5 years. That's too slow. So what they do is they sell off a piece of the company. Now, by selling off a piece of the company, how much do you sell off? So if you want $100 million, how much do you give someone for that $100 million? Well, that's where the valuation comes in. So that's when they would say, okay, well, if you want to invest $100 million, we're saying the company's worth $1 billion now. So by them purchasing 10%, which would be worth $100 million, that is what gives Whoop $1 billion valuation. Some people are a bit confused with that. It doesn't mean they make $1 billion. It just means that is what the equity and all the stock in the company put together is worth. Now, the big news is that just as of last week, SoftBank, which is a Japanese bank, invested $200 million in the last round of funding at Whoop, which put them at a $3.6 billion valuation. Which, oh my God, if you were that other bank or whoever the funders were for the last round at $100 million, you are laughing. Your company has gone from your stock has gone from worth, $100 million, and it's 3.6 times since then, which is amazing. So they have done some announcing as to what they're going to do with that money. What have they said they're going to do?
Oh, they're just going to blow it on a few big nights out.
They're like, dude, massive.
We're going to go 1% recovery for 3 weeks in a row.
Founder of Whoop, Will Ahmed, C-suite purchases $120 million San Francisco mansion.
Now, they're obviously keeping some of it close to their chest, but they're going huge. Is basically like short of it here. Like they're raising stupid amount of money. The main stuff they're trying to do is more features within the app. So, for example, a good one is they just launched the menstrual cycle coaching.
Okay.
So for women, for their menstrual cycling. Yeah, good for me to know. They're doing like heaps of different levels now. So like you got levels onboarding, and then they want to go coaching within the app as well.
Okay.
So you could actually get coaching, which is quite cool.
Like remote coaching.
Remote coaching.
Yeah, okay.
Through the app. Because they can see all your data.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
It's on the back end. Because, you mean, we coach clients and we use Whoop.
Yeah.
So it would basically be the same. Be the same through Whoop.
But maybe you would like message each other in the app. That would be the
coaching. No, it is. Yeah, they got a photo over here. Like it's literally like back and forth. Yeah, back and forth messaging.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
In the app, they've got different ways they can do it. I think they're going to have probably less personal coaching and more like top athletes will go on and do like ask me anything or get personal coach, stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're going from 100 employees to 500.
Wow. Wow.
It's
a big investment.
Pretty nutcase. And they're massively expanding the live broadcasts. So live sporting events around the world, they'll give you real-time physiological data of the athletes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Imagine seeing like, you know, an NBA team come out in the game 7 and it's like their recovery scores.
That's what they're going to have.
LeBron James, 2%.
Yeah, I mean, actually, because I mean, a bunch of NBA players already wear it.
Yeah.
So
Olympians are wearing it.
I mean, they're already doing it for PGA. They're doing it for Daytona, the car racing.
Yeah.
And they're doing it for the Tour de France as well.
I'm sure they'll be doing it in F1 soon as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's huge for those. They get insane strains, if you've looked them up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, they come out of, if you watch the Netflix show, the F1 show, like they come out of the cars like saturated. Like their suit is wet. Their hair is wet. Like they're full sweating.
Yeah.
Because like, hot. It's hot in
it's
the car.
It's also very hot.
Yeah. Like super hot in the car and you're just like covered in sweat.
But I was going to say, because you remember Macaulay Jones? He's like our friend. Yeah. What type of driver is he? Race car driver.
Yeah, he's
V8 supercars.
V8 supercar.
Yeah, V8 supercar race car driver. And he wears a Whoop. And yeah, he'll get like a 17, like 160, 170 heart rate for like 2.5, 3 hours.
Yeah, so it's nuts.
And he's a pretty fit guy. But then I think, so that we were talking before, they acquired Push, which is the accelerometer.
Yep. New company.
So what I'm hoping is that they will keep acquiring and maybe start to acquire like some things around nutrition. Because we talked about this before, like when they can combine it with nutrition, they've done nothing with it and they've planned nothing. So it probably will be like maybe they'll acquire, you know, the best nutrition tracking sort of company in the space, and then they can combine the softwares.
Yeah. Bro, there's so much potential and so much to come. And like, yeah, this acquiring of Push, which is like, it's wearable as well. And they use it for sports performance. So like tracking 1RMs, bar path speeds, vertical jumps, stuff like that. So it's obviously going to upgrade the accelerometer in Whoop. I mean, it's hard because like now you're going to put more hardware in a device that people want smaller.
Mm.
I mean, okay, we'll think about
it. No, wouldn't it be a separate thing you'd wear?
Maybe. Yeah maybe. But I'd imagine the real selling point of Whoop is it's just one band, right?
Yeah.
It would, in some ways, it would be kind of annoying. Like, if in the future, they had like 7 bands you had to wear for different activities. It'd be kind of annoying, right? Yeah. What's great about it is...
Plus the... what's the thing we talked about with...
Bicep strap?
No, what's the one we talked about with...
The blood glucose monitor.
Glucose monitor. So, you also got like a needle in your arm.
Man, yeah. people don't want to put too many straps on.
That would be a great acquisition.
Yeah.
If they could get...
Blood glucose monitoring?
Blood glucose monitor in there.
Yeah. You'd have to be separate. It couldn't be in the
device. No, it'd have to be separate. Yeah. But that would be something worth it.
Yeah, like the Whoop. Yeah, blood glucose monitoring.
Because the point is just putting this stuff together.
Yeah.
7 apps.
It's combining the data.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah. I'm surprised they haven't like acquired like any of the running apps, you know? Like Strava.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like stuff like that. Like you probably wouldn't get from Under Armour. Like Under Armour have like Map My Run. They've got MyFitnessPal.
Nike have a running app.
Yeah, and they've got like a suite of online businesses. You'd think that's like the road they're going to go down.
Yeah, because people would like to see that run in the Whoop, like their cadence, right, and their average pace and stuff like that in the app.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get it live, obviously, because Whoop doesn't have a screen, but having that data later would be like, I think that's what people will want in the future. There's nothing stopping them from doing it, right? They're growing ridiculously fast, so I'm sure they'll get there. But also in the tech startup news space, so a while ago, there was a company, and I read the book, and that's where I found out about it. The book was called Bad Blood, I think.
Bad Blood.
Yeah. And,
it's a massive book.
Yeah. And it was about, basically, it was a book documenting a tech startup gone wrong by this woman called Elizabeth Holmes. And basically, she had conned her way into something like... I'm not sure how much money, but I think she took on...
I think it was over $1 billion. Like,
Close to $1 billion of investment by not creating a fake company, but by creating a company full of lies. So basically, she had this vision that she would, from a pinprick in your finger of blood, tell like all this crazy detail about like cholesterol levels and like hormone levels, vitamin levels, and like be a super accurate check-in. Anyway, what ends up happening is it turns out like a pinprick is not enough blood, right? And it's like actually impossible. People have tried it before. Lots of people have been trying it. And the general consensus is, at least for right now, it's like pretty impossible technology.
Like
it's
just, you need to actually take blood, which is like you proper need
more
amounts blood. Of blood.
Yeah, you need more blood. It's just not enough in the actual blood itself. So anyway, she claimed that she had created this technology and she's taking on all this investment. But as she's taking on more and more investment and convincing more and more people to invest... She's telling them, oh, we've made this many sales and the technology does this and that, but it was all kept behind closed doors. And actually, it turns out none of that stuff was actually happening and that the technology was failing. And so, as she was taking on more money, like they were just presenting basically false data and false information to the investors. And some of the people that she got to invest was like, one of them was, it was like the guy, he was the, is it called the Secretary of State in America? He was Donald Trump's like head of like the military. It's like a 5-star general. And then it was like
Colin Powell?
No. And then she got into like Walmart, Then she got into some other major grocery chains. Anyway, the thing was going nuts, but then obviously it all caught up to her. Now she's facing trial. So she's got 10 counts of wire fraud and 2 counts of attempted wire fraud. But it looks like the decision will go through pretty soon, and I think she's going to go away for a while. I think she's going to go away for a while. Her and that other guy.
Oh, the Indian guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a great audiobook.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to listen to it.
Yeah, it is a great story.
There'll probably be, as well, a very good movie about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she looks like she's gone.
Yeah. Oh, it's not looking good. Stole a lot of money. Stole a lot of money. Anyway, so one other thing, I was in the park the other day with a friend. We're going for a walk, obviously, COVID safe, social distance. And we were talking about, he was asking me some questions around, he got injured recently, and he was going to the gym, he was adding muscle, gaining weight, feeling really good for the first time. Then he used that momentum and he was like, oh, cool, now I'm going to do martial arts. So he threw martial arts in there as well. And then he got back into playing soccer as well. So he started doing all these things in 1 week. And then he got injured really bad, like tore his plantar fascia.
Mostly before COVID, right?
Yeah. It's before COVID. Tore his plantar fascia and then basically stopped doing everything. And now it's back to zero. And he was like, damn, it sucks. Cause
standard strategy.
Yeah. So he's like, I was feeling really good. It was the best I was performing. I was doing everything. And then obviously my body kind of... fell apart, and he was asking me the question. He's like, I want to get back into it, but how do I prioritize things in terms of how much of each thing can I do so that I can still improve at everything? And that's when I had the discussion. I thought it was interesting to have it here, is like, you have to, the body can only do so much. And if you had all the time in the world, you had all the funds, you know, you had no stress, you could probably do a lot of training and bring yourself up a lot. If you had PEDs, you could do even more. But realistically, everyone works, everyone has a job, everyone's got families and friends and other commitments. People don't always sleep perfect. So there are things and pressures in our life, which is a normal part of life, that stop us from getting to all the goals in every physical endeavor that you take on. Can't be the best soccer player and the most jacked guy in the gym and the best martial artist, right? They're all conflicting goals. So in terms of prioritizing things, you know, we had a discussion and he was like, oh, you know, I'm pretty happy to like maintain my levels in the sports and like really improve myself physically. And that's when I had the discussion of like getting in shape is much harder than staying in shape. And that's like a concept that I think a lot of beginners and even intermediate people don't really appreciate. I mean, I wouldn't say we're like fully formed, but you know, we've put on the large majority of the amount of muscle mass that we should put on naturally in our frames, right? Like there's probably a little bit more to go, but it's like pretty minimal at this point. Like, I don't know, what would you say like the most?
Yeah, and it's probably same with even cardiovascular.
Yeah.
You know, you probably juiced out the 60 to 80%.
Yeah.
And then you have to just keep working for the last bit, but it's smaller and smaller returns for the time you put in.
Like if you put on any more weight in your legs, you would just be constantly chafing. You're bringing on a bottle of baby oil, it's oiling up your legs. Like, yeah, there's only so much muscle that the body can put on at a certain point, right? And so, like, I'd say we're probably within the last 5 kilos. Like, I couldn't really imagine putting on more than another 5-6 kilos of, like, pure muscle, right? If you think of that, it's like a kilo steak, like a scotch fillet, a kilo of scotch fillet.
Yeah, five, it's tons.
Heaps of muscle, right? It's heaps. And people don't fully appreciate that, but I guess the point I'm making is that, like, to get... people will start the journey and they're like, oh, I don't know if I can sustain this. I don't know if I can eat this, keep eating this much. I don't know if I can be this disciplined. I don't know if I can train this often. And you actually don't have to in the future. Now, you have to sustain that consistency of what it takes to get in shape for a while. And then after our talk with Dom D'Agostino about maintenance, it seems like you probably have to hold it for a year and create like a new set point.
For body fat.
Body fat and like muscle mass and stuff as well. Like
physical changes.
New body weight.
Yeah.
Let's talk weight gain, for example. So say you wanted to maybe lose a bit of body fat and gain 5-6 kilos as a beginner or intermediate. You do that. Now I'd say to maintain that level, say you're pretty happy for a bit, you'd have to maintain that level for a year. So you'd have to maintain all the consistency and all the habits that it would take to get to that level. Then what you can do is you can actually drop it back a little bit. You can actually drop back your level. You can drop back the consistency with the food. Obviously, you've got to maintain a few things. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to at least weight train 2-3 times a week. You got to hit your protein most days. You got to hit your calories. You got to sleep. But outside of that, you can be a little bit more liberal. It's kind of like the body goes, okay, we're going to stay here for a while. This is a good set point. You've earned it. now you can drop back your training a little bit. So I think in some ways it's kind of motivating. Mm. It's like, hey, like suffer through this, go really hard, discipline. It's not always going to have to be like this. Because I think that happens a little bit sometimes. People are like, oh, let's give up. I can't do this forever.
Yeah.
My advice is like, you won't have to.
Exactly. Have and to. I think it's even more than what you think, because one way to look at it, which I often explain, is like you acquire the skill of getting in shape, right? And when you're learning the skill, it's kind of like, say, you're learning a language. Once you've learned the language, quite easy to speak the language, right? You can drop in and out anytime you want. It's a little bit like that. So at the beginning, you're like, man, I have to like remember to eat all this protein.
Mm.
Like remember to go on bed at times really hard, like walk on my shit with the gym, all this different stuff. But like once you actually get there, you've done it for several years, tons of that stuff you don't even count anymore. Like I never even think like, oh, you're not going to like find a way to get all this protein in today. It's like it's automatic.
Mm.
So even if I don't think about my exercise and my training that day, like I probably still ticked off a number of good things for my fitness.
Yeah.
You know, like I probably got to bed on time because I knew it was important.
Yeah.
Ate enough protein, drank enough water,
yeah.
Didn't eat shit. I did all these awesome things that for somebody else, it's like, dude, this was like boot camp.
Yeah.
This was like crazy. I did like stay switched on all day. I could not slip up and just go to the candy store.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it's just like automatic.
Yeah.
I put zero thought towards it. That day was like a non-training day.
Mm.
Like a full no fitness
If anything,
day.
You might be like, fuck, it was a shit day.
Yeah, terrible day. Didn't think about it, but I actually ticked off a whole bunch. And that's the reality, but you stop counting those things.
Yeah.
You think like, oh, they don't count anymore. Like, it's obvious you got to eat protein, bro.
Yeah.
But it's not to the average person, you know? So, if you look at it like that, it's like acquiring skills. So, you're learning the language, so hard to learn Spanish. Eventually, you can speak Spanish. You can just drop in and out anytime. You're like, I haven't spoken Spanish for ages, but like, still speak Spanish. And I think that's where people don't realize you can get to.
Mm.
Which, like, oh, I just like know how to be in shape. And like, yeah, you're not at your top level. Mm. Like, I'm not on my top level. I only put 5% of thought towards it. But you can still be way better than it was when I was working really hard 10 years ago.
Mm. You know, I had an experience recently where I dropped back to, I would say, a day where it was like the average person's day.
Mm.
I didn't think about it. So, this is my food, right? So, I went for a walk, ate an almond croissant, which I'm a little bit scared to
That's
see.
That's pretty good, man. It's almonds.
I'm a little bit healthy. I'm a little bit scared to find out how many calories those things have, because I eat one and honestly, I don't eat for like the rest of the day. They're so dense and like, I don't know what.
Probably like 800?
2,000? No, it's a lot. But anyway, so I ate that thing. I had a coffee. Thing is, right, so much sugar and so many calories in it, and you combine it with the caffeine.
Oh, you feel so good.
You feel fucking incredible, right? You feel like you can run a fucking marathon.
No one of those fat people.
Anyway, so I'm eating this almond croissant. And then the next thing I eat is fucking this cookie dough, right? At like 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, I saw it. The one from...
Yeah, Bennett Street Bakery. Bennett Street.
Dude, that
you didn't even tell me the whole time it's there. You don't even tell me it's famous for its cookies.
Yeah.
That's like its thing.
Yeah, I know.
We ate there heaps of times. You didn't mention it once.
That's the one thing that like I see every time and I've resisted for several years.
Right. So, for people who are listening, Raf lives right next to this place, like world famous for their cookies. Mm. And like,
and they put it in front of your face as you can't get a coffee without looking at these.
I didn't even know that. So, it never even occurred to me. But turns out in the last lockdown, they started selling the cookie dough. People always wanted to buy the cookie dough, but they'd never used it to sell
it. Went crazy. First day, sold out.
And now you can get it in Woolworths and Harris Farm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude.
Is that where you got it?
Yeah.
Oh.
They were sitting on...
I was wondering why you went all the way to that cafe.
They were sitting on a multi-million dollar idea and it took a lockdown for them to realize that.
They've killed it in COVID.
Killed it. They killed it. They were just a store selling cookies.
I know they killed it because when they reopened, you can eat in.
Yeah.
They didn't bring it back.
Yeah.
They just kept the chairs locked up.
Why? Eventually, they'll shut the cafes down probably, you know, because they're selling so much. They're in Woolies.
Is the cookie dough good?
Woolies is like making it to... Whole Foods in America, you know? Obviously not as much money, but it's like you've made it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's so easy to
I'm
do.
I'm not surprised.
So easy. You cut it up, put it on the thing, put it in your oven for 12 minutes and take it out. It's done.
No, I know. Everyone like walks around the street, around the cafes, talking about how good it is.
Dude, it is unreal. But anyway.
That shit's bad for you.
I had that, right? I had probably a four. You know when you eat really nice food, like cookies, and then... You go for one more, and you eat it, and you instantly go, I should not have done
100%.
That. You're like, I feel disgusting.
Weekly experience for me.
I feel sick. I feel sick straight away.
And you like, also like dislike yourself a bit more.
Yeah. So, I'm sitting there. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to like watch some YouTube and read a book or something and just, you know, just forget about the fact that I hate myself. And then, next thing I know, the doorbell rings. I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, have you ordered takeaway? She's like, yeah, sorry. I was so hungry. I couldn't wait for you to decide. But it's all right. I ordered for you. Ordered like my normal tacos and stuff. Dude, it's like hot chips.
Oh my god.
Tacos.
So actually like, an average person's day.
Yeah, and now it's hot and I'm like full and feeling kind of sick.
Have to eat it.
I'm like, well, I can't let it go cold because there's no way I'm gonna eat it when it's cold. So I eat it hot and then I'm sitting on the couch. And this is when I had the like a everyday person's experience, right? when you're like down in the dumps, you really feel like shit. I haven't trained today. I've just eaten like shit. You're going over your day, and you go, you know, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna fast for like 2 days.
Yeah.
And then I was, she's like, okay.
I'm always like, I'm going to do 3 workouts tomorrow.
Then I was like, you know what? And then I think I'm going to go move to AM, PM sessions. Like, yeah, I'm double up my running in the mornings, and then I'm going to do weights in the arvos. I like start writing out this plan on my phone. She's like, and then I'm like, you know what? And then I'm going to get back into like green shakes. And it's like, I'm going to go to green shakes. I'm like, you know what? I'll just go now. The shop's going to close in like 15 minutes. I'm just going to get some greens for tomorrow so I can start straight away. She's like, stop. She's like, you're not going to fast. You're not going to increase your workouts. You're not going to drink green shakes. She's like, just don't eat like a dickhead tomorrow. And that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because you can, like that damage that you do, you're like, wow, I haven't done that in a long time. And you feel like shit.
Now I understand why so many people come to us and they're like in the middle, I had another one this week, in the middle of a juice cleanse.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you get to this point? And I'm like, man, they're like, I just did the worst things. I knew I needed to punish myself.
And it does make you feel like that. But speaking of punishing yourself, I actually watched a really good video and we watched the first half of it. Jeff Nippard, people don't know. I'd say probably one of the best guys on YouTube. Real science-based, evidence-based, but entertaining approach to training and nutrition. Actually, he's got some really good stuff. I think I was talking about it the other day about some of the vaccine stuff. I sent some people to his page. But anyways, he put a good video up recently on cardio for fat loss. And that's obviously a discussion we've had a lot. And basically between what we talk about and what he talked about covered all the same things. But there was one point that he brought across I thought was worth mentioning, which was his first mistake, which is, you know, people believe that doing cardio is better than dieting for fat loss, which is untrue. But he believes, or his theory for the two mechanisms, which I would agree with, having doing so much running now. Because like when you do cardio, you do, like, according to these watches and these bands, burn a lot of calories. Most of the studies are suggesting that's probably off by about 40%, 20 to 40%.
At least.
Depending on the device. So you can't take it too seriously. It's only a gauge. So like if your watch says, oh, you burn 1,000 calories on that run, don't go eat 1,000 calories because you'll eat more than you burn for sure. You know, conservatively say like, okay, cool, I burnt 400, maybe 500 calories. But he's saying it's not good for weight loss because of two mechanisms. Now, the first one is people go and start doing cardio and they don't change their food. They do change their food, but in compensatory overeating, however you want to say it. And what that is like people go, oh yeah, cool, I worked out today. I'm going to like reward myself. I'm going to be a bit more liberal with my food. And then they like, you know, they order a side of hot chips or they have like a chocolate milk or something they usually wouldn't have on the way home from the park. And as a result, they're constantly offsetting the deficit that they've created through cardio. It's much easier to create that deficit through food. You know, because it's so much harder to burn 500 calories than it is to eat a 500 calorie Arm & Croissant, right? So that's number one.
Well, it's like, you know, not eating for a day, it's actually not very hard at all.
Yeah.
But to work out double what you would eat to create, you know, the same deficit.
Hard.
Would be like the hardest day of your life.
It's so hard. So
five sessions, each for an hour and a half.
So hard. So that's number one. And number two is what you get is a subconscious reduction in your NEAT. So your non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So basically all the movements that you do throughout a day goes down subconsciously without you even realizing because you did such a hard cardio session. So it's like the feeling, right? You go for a big run, you go for a big walk. The next thing you do for the next 10, 12 hours, you sit around the couch, do nothing, you put your feet up, you don't feel like doing anything. Whereas if you hadn't done that massive bout of cardio, and people that do really high intensity cardio, like CrossFitters and group fitness people, know this the most, right? They're wiped out for the day. So they go and have a nap, they lie on the beach, they do nothing, right? And then therefore those extra movements that you would normally do over the next 12 hours goes down. And that in itself offsets the calories that you've burned. You don't go for that extra, you know, you don't carry the groceries in as you would have. Maybe you order takeaway instead of going and shopping for the groceries instead. You know, a little bit less fidgeting. I don't know, maybe you normally go for, you know, a walk around your house or your apartment or your backyard or something. You don't do that. You lie on the couch instead. You have a nap, you know, instead of staying awake. There's all these little small things you don't even realize that you're doing that you don't have the energy for because you put out a hard bout of cardio. And these two things, this compensatory overeating and also this reduction in NEAT, is the reason why cardio is not a good, a great tool for fat loss. It's very much, I think he puts it well, it's like supplements, right? Supplements help a really good diet, but they're not the whole thing. In the same way that I think cardio really supports good weight training when it comes to weight loss and body composition change.
You mean good dieting?
Yeah, that as well. But I mean, like, in terms of just the training right. aspect of it, like, the foundation, your bread and butter, your vegetables, is in on a diet perspective, is calorie deficit, right? Managing your calories and your protein. But in terms of training, weight training is your protein and your calories, right? That's the shit that's going to make a difference. And cardio is a supplement, right? Just like supplements are to the diet, they help. They're going to help with weight loss.
You're in the last few percent.
Yeah. And then, but I really think cardio, it's you need it for good metabolic health. You need it
because
it supports your weight training, right? It makes your weight training better. But hitting the weights is like where you make the difference, which is why I get excited, right? When people come in, they're like, all I've done is cardio my whole life. I can't lose weight. I'm like, beautiful.
Game over.
Cut the cardio out.
Here we go.
Let's just do weights. And then you see a massive change.
Well, I mean, those two factors, you also do those two things at the same time. So you overeat and you don't move.
Yeah.
That's what you do. So like you finish training, you like don't move. You just lie on the couch. And then you shovel food in.
Yeah.
And whereas everyone's experienced that. Like, you do a massive session. Like, who doesn't eat a bit more?
Yeah.
Like, you've earned it.
Yeah. But you do that less when you lift weights, right?
Yeah, 100%.
You don't get that, like, crazy rebound effect, right? That's why...
And the neat effect is definitely smaller as well.
Yeah.
After weights, you, like, you often feel pretty good. You're pretty energized. Whereas, like, if I run 20 kilometers, I'm like, oh, I've finished my movement for the day.
Yeah. If you do good structured weight training program, you feel good afterwards, right? It's hard at the time, but that after effect is... You know, such a big difference.
And I think someone's explaining why, and it's like the body's really made to not burn that many calories in cardio. Because if you could imagine, right, if you kept burning calories freely, you would starve to death so quickly.
You'd lose a lot of weight, really.
Yeah, so you're out in the wild and you like had to do a massive day of like, I don't know, like moving from one place to the next. You had to go hunting. You had to do all this activity. If you just like burnt 10,000 calories on that day, like, you'd be starving.
Yeah.
Your body would be, like, dropping weight so quickly, and you had to access really high-calorie foods to make up for it. So, like, your body is designed to not do that. And as your activity increase, slow down how many calories you're burning as quickly as it can. Because otherwise, the difference would be too big.
Yeah.
You know, from, like, a regular day, you burn 2,000. Oh, really active, I burnt 9,000. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's a small difference.
Yeah.
And it feels, I think it feels like a big difference, but it's a really small difference.
That's why I think adaptations in cardio are a lot faster. Is to avoid your body burning way too many calories too quickly. Exactly what you just said.
It gets efficient.
Yeah.
More and more efficient. So that.
But very quickly.
Very quickly. So on a normal day now, you burn 2,000. You start going for runs. You're burning 2,400. Pretty soon, you're back down to burning 2,000.
Yeah.
And now you run as well.
Well, like, you know, when we did 75 hard, we're doing a lot of long walks, like 45-minute walks. Yeah. It only took the end of the first week where it's like, dude, 45-minute walk's nothing.
Yeah.
The first 45-minute walk's really difficult. But you try and like... make, you know, 60 kilos on the barbell in 7 days feel like nothing. It's not going to happen. It's going to take a while to build that up. So, I think those changes, your body is very careful with how it uses cardio and its efficiency there. So, you don't need much of it. Do it well structured. Keep most of it, you know, steady state. Be careful with the high intensity stuff. And man, I think you make way more progress for weight loss and body composition change just with weight training.
Yeah, I just think like it's great, but just don't do it for weight loss.
Yeah.
Do as much of it as you want.
Exactly. Don't do it for weight loss.
But it's not for weight loss. Like... I remember the one time last time I tried to lose weight, I was like, oh, the first thing I'll stop doing is cardio. I'll bring back the cardio, bring back the weights, and I'll focus on the diet.
Yeah.
You know, because I knew that the cardio, I won't have energy for it. I'm not going to perform as well. Like, I want to be able to fuel that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so really for me, if I was to lose weight, yeah, I would cut the cardio.
Yeah. Yeah, I ain't doing that anytime soon. Okay, so before we dive into today's listener questions, guys, True Protein is doing a deal for new customers, $20 off. If you go to themymuscleproject.com/TrueProtein, you can get that deal. Guys, as you know, True Protein has the best supplements under the sun. Even now, you can get them in the US. So if you go to the US, or if you live in the US, you can order them. These are Australian supplements. They are manufactured here. They are clean. They're tasty. They're not overly sweet. And they got a big range of supplements now. So if you guys do supplement, and I think most of us do at this point, we highly recommend getting the True Protein stuff. If you've had a problem with different supplements in terms of how they mix, in terms of how they taste, in terms of how they settle in your body, it's time to make the switch to True Protein. So again, themymuscleproject.com/TrueProtein is where you can get that deal if you're a new customer.
And I had another person ask, it is available in the States.
It is, yeah.
Yes, it's still available.
Yeah.
And I guess it's cheaper because you've got some mad dollar over there.
Yeah.
Okay, first listener question. We have Kev Patrician. Can one get similar results with a 3-day full body program as a 4 upper, lower, or a 5-day split?
So full body 5 days versus split five days?
No, 3 days of full body or like a 4 or 5 day split. Where you split, obviously, if you're doing a 4 or 5 day, I think he's assuming you're splitting like
upper and lower. You're not doing full body work anymore.
Yeah. It's a good question. I think you can get the same result. I think the...
I assume he's going for like muscle building or something.
Yeah, I'd imagine. I mean, it just depends how much time you have. Like if you were to say, hey, I want really good results and I want to do it in as few days as possible, I'd say go just full body training. Most of the research, most of the data out there on full body training versus split body training is the differences are minute, like they're small. So you can definitely do full body training. I mean, a really good example is like what CrossFit brought to the market, right? Yeah. Before that, it was really only body part splits, and CrossFit was like, cool, legs every day. That was like a joke for a while. Yeah. It's like, oh, legs every day in CrossFit. Bodybuilders would come in and be like, we're doing legs again? They're only used to doing it once a week. But yeah, you can do full body training every day and get really good results. You can do, it's just what you prefer. I think it really comes down to personal preference. Some people would just, you know, psychologically, they only like training their legs twice a week or once a week. Mm. You know, some people love to train their, you know, split their body up, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. It just really depends on your schedule.
Yeah, I think the difference is minutia, but I guess I was thinking, if you put in the same amount of time, instead of doing 5 days, you did it in 3 days, it would be very similar. So same amount of volume, but you just compressed it into the days.
Yeah.
Very similar. You'd probably have a slight benefit spreading up in 5 days because you're just like a bit more intense in the training, a bit more recovery between them. But yeah, I think for nearly everything, probably the only exception might be, I think when you go, like when you really start to get into like powerlifting training and you're like really trying to work on different lifts, I think splitting them up works pretty well because the weights start to get really heavy. But before that, man, I think for like just normal natural lifters, it works better.
Yeah. The advantage of split body routines is as well, you do get a little bit more exposure to different movements. Because in full body training, obviously your total amount of movements that you're doing is less. Because where you would do on a back day, say a pull up and a row, on a full body day, it's like, cool, I'm going to do like a deadlift and a row. Right, so you're kind of doing your back exercise, but you're also kind of doing legs because you kind of have to get that in. So you're kind of mixing a few things. So if you like experimenting with different movements and you want more exposure to different movements and more exercises, then a split body routine is good then, because that is when you get the opportunity to have more exercise selection and you have to try different things. It depends on, you know, powerlifters like simplicity, right? That's their personality type. That's why they like doing, you know, only a few exercises per session. Whereas, you know, the bodybuilding type, they love to do a shitload of exercise, a lot of them. So it just kind of depends on your personality type. In terms of advantages, disadvantages, pretty similar.
Jaden_Thu, how do you deal with body dysmorphia?
Mm.
Do you know the definition of body dysmorphia?
Body dysmorphia is basically where you feel a certain way about your body. And like, who's to say what's objective, what's not objective, but I guess maybe the subjective view of the majority of people around you think very differently to your view. So that would be the most classic case. Because this is a guy, right? You said David?
Yeah. It's a guy.
I guess Jaden. Sorry, the most classic case that everyone's pretty familiar with is like bulimia or anorexia, right? Where the girl thinks she's still fat, but everyone's like, whoa, you're starving to death. Like, I can see your ribs. I can see your heart beating through your ribs. And she's like, no, I'm fat, right? So that's the most extreme case of body dysmorphia, where someone thinks, wow, I'm fat, but you know, the general consensus is for pretty much all those cases, it's like, hey, you need to put on weight, like you're actually too skinny. Now, for guys, you know, this is something that I definitely had, which was where you think you're really small, it was a fact for a while, but still you think you're really small. So even now, I even get it for height sometimes, right? This height is separate, but...
Well, you think you're short?
No, I forget I'm tall.
Right.
I forget I'm tall.
Do you like bump into shit?
Hit my head on shit? No, I'm not that retarded.
Can't reach. Like, yes, you can. Oh, yeah.
No, but I'll be hanging out, say, with a group of midgets like you, and then someone will say something and they'll be like, oh, for the big man. And I'm like, who's that? They're like, you. I'm like, oh, why are you saying that? They're like, you're so fucking tall. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yes, I am. Or I'll look at a photo of like me and Ev.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, she's a midget.
Yeah, she is a midget though.
I know, but... You just forget. Sometimes you forget the difference, right? You can't have that self-awareness of your height all the time, right? So that would be an example. I guess that's the same mechanism as dysmorphia, is where you kind of forget that you have, that you're
a similar,
certain way.
I think though it's a little bit different. I think what you said at the start, I think body dysmorphia is more when you get more obsessed with it.
Yeah, so I think it's unhealthy obsession.
Yeah, so it's unlike you're not like forgetting about it, you're like more obsessed with it. So like, yeah, you're often you're wrong, right? Like I'm fat, but like you're not actually fat.
Or yeah.
I'm really small, you're actually completely jacked.
Yeah.
But it's really when you're like thinking about it all day, you know, and you can't like walk past a mirror without delving back into thoughts about it, which is why, you know, pretty obviously any sort of like aesthetics training can lead to it, because it's just like obsessive focus on the way you look or some flaw with the way you look. So if you're just putting focus on it all the time, you can see how that in some people can lead to that.
Yeah. I mean, the example I always give that when I had it really bad was when I first started in the training in the gym, it was like all bodybuilding training back in like 2008, 2009. And I was obsessed with my food. That's probably like one sign is like you're obsessed with your nutrition. Like couldn't miss a meal, had to be certain things, like stop skipping social events, wouldn't drink, just like eating all the time, like really wanted to get big, right? And like sort of working, sort of not working, some beginner gains, but was following a pretty shit program, like wasn't eating enough. But anyway, then I went to Europe in 2011 after I'd finished school, and it gave me a break. And anytime you travel, there's like this opportunity, and people that travel, well, no one's really traveled much recently, but when you do travel, you get a moment in perspective to look back on your life and how it is and be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't do those things, or maybe I should do those things, or that's a waste of time. That's not a waste of time. And I had this moment where I was like, oh, all those behaviors, they weren't really serving me. I wasn't really enjoying my life as an 18-year-old kid as much as I probably should, because I'm so obsessed with the gym. And anyway, so I came back from Europe and I kind of fell back into it a little bit again, probably not as extreme, but still very self-conscious about my body. But then not long after, found CrossFit. And the benefit of CrossFit was that there were no mirrors in the gym. And I think that up until that point, every single gym had mirrors, right? So you were always thinking about how you looked. You're always checking out how small my arms were, checking out how small my shoulders were, how small my leg, and you just get this obsession, right? And then, because every time you train, right? And I was training every day, or most days, so I was constantly thinking about it. And then I joined a CrossFit gym, and then all of a sudden I'm training, and it's not about how I look, it's about the numbers on the bar. And I have talked about before how I then probably carried over this similar obsession into how weak I was by constantly comparing myself and like pushing my body to breaking points because, you know, I wanted to be stronger. But regardless, in terms of dysmorphia, what happened was I put on probably 6 or 7 kilos without ever thinking about how I looked. It was just one day I stepped on the scale, because there's no mirrors in the gym, so you're not really checking yourself. My house didn't have any like
tall mirrors. You just changed your focus away as well.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, I was like, holy shit, that number's crazy. I tried so hard to get that number up for so long and it was barely moving. And now without really even thinking about it, just focusing on the training, just focusing on refueling and all this other stuff, I put all the weight on. But the good thing was I'd put the weight on and then I kind of stopped caring. I was like, yeah, you know what? If I put on weight, great, awesome. But as long as my performance keeps increasing, I'm happy. And that's when the body dysmorphia kind of shifted away. And look, I would lie to say that it doesn't still kind of linger sometimes where it's like, oh man, it'd be good to be a bit bigger here, or fuck, I look really skinny here, or not that great. But you just kind of shrug it off and learn to deal with it. And you kind of realize that, hey, everyone's kind of going through it to some extent. And if anything, the more extreme someone's body type is, and that would be like the more muscles they have, the more jacked they are, the more lean they are, they're probably dealing with more self-confidence issues. Not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them. And that's why they're that way, because they train so hard, they eat so obsessively, they train so obsessively because they have body dysmorphia. Did we really tell them how to deal with it?
No, not at all.
That wasn't very helpful.
I'm actually going to step into the realm of your own therapist here.
Okay,
sweet. Which I'm unqualified for. But you're actually pretty big yourself, Jaden, in this photo, and you're like flexing into the camera for your photo. So when you look perfectly good, you're like low body fat, pretty big arms. But I think that, you know, if this is like your profile picture on your social media is like you flexing into the mirror, like you're always going to put a high amount of
value on
how you look. And that can be unhealthy, because then, whatever, if you just like stop training for a while because you develop other interests, like nothing wrong with that. But if this is like the first thing you show the world, then be like, oh, you like look different when I see you. Like, must be really into your arms because like it's like you're flexing in your profile photo.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to make it worse, I think, with something like that, right? Because you're putting so much of your value. I was like, hey, it's the most important thing about me is like my arms right now.
Yeah.
So that's probably not going to help, I would say. And I don't think making like the way your arms look as like one of the most important characteristics about you is going to support you.
Yeah. Well, and to double down on what you're saying is like, maybe, I don't know, because I'm not on the profile, but I can speak to so many other profiles I see, is you then post photos of your body in a way that you then expect or basically you wait for approval, you wait for, I guess, a feel-good moment where you have more people like your photo based off how you look. Like, if you're putting a shirtless photo up there, you're clearly looking for approval to get a certain amount of likes, to be like, okay, I'm making good progress, people are respecting this, and that kind of boosts that body dysmorphia in some ways as well. It's because it's like, oh, people only like me if I keep getting more jacked.
So I think taking a break from that would be a really good first step, because truth is, nobody cares. No one really cares about how your arms look.
Yeah.
You know, so
you
it's
care
like,
the most.
Yeah, it's not very interesting content.
Yeah.
I guess to be a starting point probably for most people, unless you're like actually Ronnie Coleman. Then I like to look at the photos of Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah.
But
well, you're making money based on
yeah, when you're like actually at the very top level, but that's not everybody listening to the show. So I reckon that is going to make it worse. And I think that, yeah, probably if you're an obsessive personality, you probably can't fight that, but you could find a new interest.
And that's,
like, for me, it's probably the same thing as you. It was like, as soon as I found CrossFit and got into it, I just kind of dropped it. You know, and then, you think of it time to time when you see yourself again, but often you're like, oh, it's cool. Like, it's working pretty well, but you just have a new focus, right? And that's what sport always does to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a good lesson for anyone listening. And I know this is a topic that comes up a lot, but, you know, just be careful when you put your photos of your body out there and what you expect to get back from it. Like, subconsciously, what are you doing? Are you looking for, are you trying to share the journey to inspire people, which is a noble cause? Or are you trying to get approval from others that how you look and the training that you're doing is making you feel better about yourself because you don't have self-confidence, right? Because you are lacking in your own ability to walk around proud with how you look and just be happy in your own skin. You need other people to approve how you look. So it can just be a slippery slope with like taking photos of yourself, putting them out there, waiting for the approval of others to validate your own self-confidence.
And if it's not your business, like if you're not making money from it, I do question why, like, no one's very interested in it, to be honest.
Unless you're single and you're like, it's mating, which it is for a lot of people.
But then
so
there's specific apps for that.
Yeah. But yeah, like, it's from a business perspective, I totally get it. It's, we don't need to talk about that. But yeah, from just purely personal perspective, it's one of those things you have to question a little bit. And not to pass judgment, I'm just warning you, this is the slope that you're sliding down.
Good luck. Okay.
Hopefully that's
good. Another actually really good question. Blake Wiz, how do you manage with giving nutrition advice without a qualification? For example, being a dietitian. So it's a pretty good question. Not sure if you're which side you're on here. If you are a dietitian or maybe just a trainer trying to give advice. But I guess to fill people in, because people often wonder about this as well, which is like you can be, and correct if I'm wrong here, you can be a nutritionist with, say, if you've done like precision level one, you can be like, oh, I'm a nutritionist.
Yep.
And that's usually what most trainers are. Or you can go to university and become a dietitian. And that's where you're qualified to give like a full suite of actual advice, you know, and be like, hey, you know, I recommend these supplements, this diet, and I've checked everything out there. You're like, you're obviously more covered. You'd have insurance as a dietitian as well. Whereas someone's a nutritionist, would be a trainer, is you can just give like diet recommendations.
Yeah, I think more specifically, the line gets drawn between meal plans and macros.
Yeah, I've heard that exactly. Yeah,
dietitians
can give exact meal plans.
Yeah,
this is what I say you should eat.
This much of this food.
Yeah. Whereas nutritionist is like, hey, I recommend increasing your protein, you know, reducing your fat. Probably a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically what the law says.
Yeah.
In practice, they're basically the same thing.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would ever choose a dietitian over in terms of a well-qualified nutritionist is that a dietitian can recommend or have a more intricate knowledge of foods and micronutrients as it relates to chronic disease. So if you come in with like diabetes or you've come in with like high blood pressure or cholesterol issues or some other metabolic condition, that's when you need to go see a dietitian.
Yeah.
It's not that nutritionists can't do it, but the knowledge that it takes to understand those different mechanisms in the body, I just feel a little bit more confident with a dietitian than I would with a nutritionist.
Yeah, definitely. And then so to deal with like how you deal with that, for the results for 95% of the people, a nutritionist gets them all the way there.
Yeah.
Because they're after muscle gain and fat loss.
Yeah.
And that's, you just prescribe stuff.
Yeah.
Even if they prescribe anything, just tell them to start tracking. That usually gets them pretty far.
Yeah.
You know, so really, you don't need the qualifications to just help get people in shape. You know, if I have a staff member and I want him to, you know, support 100 clients with their nutrition, I do not need dietitian qualification.
No.
And because I can just send them to a dietitian if I really need that stuff, you know, but for most people, I'm just correcting their macros.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a dietitian is most useful, I think, when they go really, really deep and really specific in a certain area. So like when, say, Dom D'Agostino like does all his research on ketogenic diet. I know he's a neuroscientist, but like getting really deep on a specific thing can be like probably, I don't know if it's a more financially rewarding career, but getting into that research field about different foods and stuff, I'd say is like where dietitians really excel beyond what nutritionists do. And nutritionists really excel when they coach people through the nutrition journey a lot more.
Yeah, but dietitians more like prescribing.
I think they do some coaching, but they spend less time on like behavioral science. Yeah. They spend more time on like the nuts and bolts, the black and white stuff when it comes to nutrition.
Because usually the person's different, which is for a dietitian, it's normally, hey, I've tried like all these different things. Nothing is working for me. I want to pay you. It's quite expensive to help me with this. You know, I'm getting like gut pain and whatever it is, and I'm overweight. So they're usually quite invested. So they'll actually do the recommendations. Whereas nutritionists are normally like, bro, I need to help my diet.
Mm.
And the biggest thing there is coaching them through the psychological process of being consistent.
Yeah.
You're not really about food sensitivities.
Yeah. And for anyone that, is in that position, you just want to help people lose weight and gain muscle and they feel like they need to go to university to study nutrition, you don't. It's fucking facts.
Well, the best thing you could do is go to university so you get the piece of paper and spend your whole time doing other courses online and in person that are way better than the degree.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
It's like exercise physiology. The degree that I did and almost finished was like, okay, up until this point, the only thing that I have that I understand more than a really good like strength and conditioning coach in terms of helping the average person is I probably understand a little bit better about injuries. But even then, it's questionable. I probably have like a better understanding of like maybe tissues and attachment points and joints and tendons and ligaments and that sort of stuff and their healing times and stuff. But it's still information that good coaches can access anyway. It's just that I was forced to sit in a lab and I was like forced to open up cadavers and play with the muscles and stuff and like learn it in a university setting. But someone who's really committed, really invested, really passionate about this sort of stuff can understand it just as deeply and just as intricately as what I do at university. We're really breaking down the barriers these days, especially in the fitness industry, between like what universities claim to teach and what they claim is important versus what you can access now from good trainers.
Okay, last question, Will Braun. Any tips on getting a coach when you're a broke student in person versus online? It's a good question. I mean, definitely online. So the price point for getting good coaching online is far lower than in person. That's the way it is. Good coach in person is going to cost you, honestly, a lot of money. And it's probably way out of your budget. If you're a student. When I was a student, it was way out of my budget.
Way out.
That's just the fact. You're talking probably $700 a week. Whereas online, I think, the money for a good coach online is like really, really worth it. It is like not that expensive. And you can get access to really good coaching. And if you're committed, you can still follow the plan. It just takes a high level of commitment. You don't have someone there like pushing you in person. But if you have that high level of commitment to like send away a video, get back the feedback, watch it, implement it. Like if you have that type of motivation, I think online coaching is unreal for the value.
I mean, I don't have much to add on to that, except that you just got to understand that really good coaches that still coach in person value their time very highly, and so they're going to charge a lot for it. But they also, if they're a really good coach and they're quite a good business person, realize that they can scale their knowledge extremely well online, and so they can basically give you the 80% of their knowledge and their expertise in like a really, not diluted format, but a really scalable format at a very cheap price. So like I wouldn't go just get any coach online. I would try and get a really good coach online, because likely, not like an average coach online probably hasn't figured out how to scale. Because you'd say they've got average knowledge and they're going to scale average knowledge. Whereas a really, really good coach.
There's no point, because you're competing against everyone in the world.
Yeah, exactly. So like go and seek out a really, really good coach that's able to scale their coaching knowledge in an app or something. They're the best for a reason, you know. That's how they got the money in the first place to be able to scale their coaching. It's because their coaching is really good. They do a great job.
Yeah, and I think understand the difference. So like if you're going to, there's a difference between coaching and programs. It's got to remember as well. I think it gets confused. So if you're going to go programs, man, go for the best. Like we bring out really good programs. Lots of other people online bring out really good programs, because you may as well just go for the best, because, you know, when we sell a program, it doesn't cost us anything for an extra person to download it.
Yeah.
So it means the price point is quite low.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is, right? It's like music. Like you don't go and listen to like your local musician. You just listen to Justin Bieber.
Yeah,
because on Spotify.
Yeah,
you know, and you can basically get whatever the top musicians anytime you want. And it's like that these days with fitness. Coaching is a little bit different, but still, it's on the way there, which means you can get really good coaching from anywhere you want at a lower price point.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we will review something this week, but before we do, 1, 2, 3 pieces of RecGen clothing I'm wearing today: socks, shorts and long sleeve top. I'm telling you right now, if RecGen stuff didn't last, I still wouldn't be wearing it. it is actually lasting extremely well. Their new range, we are wearing the hoodies.
I did rip my jumper.
Yeah, because we're wearing it to death. We're wearing it every single day.
So I'm you said, you were like, dude, new. I'm like, yeah, but I've worn it so much.
So much, so much. And it's comfortable, right? It doesn't pill. The stitching doesn't come undone. It still holds its shape really well over time. This is all the new generation of rest fleece stuff. But then also their athletic wear, right? So their long sleeves, their short sleeves, the oxy tees, even their shorts. Like, they've just made them so much better. They fixed everything. The labels aren't peeling anymore. All the stitching staying together. The shorts are amazing. We're just really beating them up at the moment. So the best part is just the transition back into your everyday. You can wear it, you can sweat in it, and then, you know, you can wear it out on the weekends. And now obviously it's a great time in lockdown to kind of, you know, get your kind of refresh your, would you, athleisure apparel. It's probably not pure training apparel, whereas like Nike makes like pure training apparel sometimes, yeah. Whereas, you know, RecGen like, kind of,
I never take rest days.
Yeah. Whereas RecGen just, it rides that beautiful line where it's like, all right, cool. You can just like kind of wear that out. It's got some casual looking stuff. And they bring out like puffer jackets and stuff, and they bring out some kind of big oversized tees with some cool logos and stuff on them in the future. So they're doing like a lifestyle range and not just a performance range as well. So very excited for that coming up. Anyway, you guys can get 15% off at themymuscleproject.com/recgen. There'll be a link there. You can click through and you can get that code, that unique code to get that 15% off. Okay. Now, I didn't tell you this, but actually at the start of yesterday, I started listening to Drake's new album. So that's what I'm going to review. What's the name of it? Certified.
Did you also listen to Kanye West's new album?
I haven't yet, but I was told it's very strange. Have you listened to it?
We did. We played it for a whole couple of mornings.
Okay, what do you think?
It's a bit too Christian for me.
It was a very Christian?
Mm.
Yeah, okay. I've heard he's experimenting. Here it is. New album, Certified Lover Boy by Drake. Look, Drake is just the hit machine, bro. Every single song on that album, like, everyone will enjoy, you know? And maybe there's a couple of songs not quite your taste.
Is it on Spotify?
Yeah. Maybe a couple of songs not quite your taste, but, you know, he's just the best because every single person on the album that he does collaborated songs with, like, they're all the best. Mm. Like, he's got another song with Jay-Z in there. Like, he's just the best. He is the best. That's why he got Artist of the Decade. Did you see that?
Did he?
Yeah, he got Artist of the Decade. Dude, he has...
Really? Which decade? 2010 to 2020?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, his... But
was he big in 2011, 2012? No, second
I think it's
decade.
Just like maybe a bit exponential, yeah. how popular it got. But
recency bias.
That's the numbers though. But he's had... I'll show you the video at the end of this. I can't remember all the stats. He put a video out about it, but he's beat like all Michael Jackson's records. He's beat all of Elton John's records. He's beat all the Beatles records. Like he's not just artist of the decade. He's like, that decade is the craziest. Maybe it's because access to music is different. That's probably got something to do with it. But like he's like untouchable at this point.
That is unbelievable.
Dude, it's crazy. It's untouchable. His level is so high right now. So, so high. It's ridiculous. But anyway, he's done it again. He's made a fucking sick album.
Yeah, he was number one in 2010.
Yeah.
So he's actually killed it the entire day.
Yeah. So 4.5 out of 5. That is only with one listen through. And it's not going to take multiple listens through to get 5 out of 5. But yeah, at first 4.5 out of 5.
Very, very impressive. I had no idea he was that popular.
Do you have anything else to review?
No, the Kanye West album was terrible. And he's not even in the top 10. He's not even in the top 10.
He's not as good as Drake.
And also, when I played it in front of everybody, everybody was like, what is this?
Oh, no.
Everyone was disappointed. It only came out that morning, so nobody had seen it yet. So, don't even take my word for it. The sample population of 12 people that came through and listened to that morning all disliked it as well.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. As usual, we love you guys. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Please keep sending us through listener questions. So follow us, subscribe on YouTube for the new content coming out, and then follow us on Instagram as well. And you can, on that page in the link in the bio of the My Muscle Project, you can find Raph and I as well. And then follow our pages. We put out some content every now and then for you guys to enjoy. But as usual, thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, The My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.